Welcome to our collective nightmare, where we report on the absurdity of existence with a smile that barely hides the existential dread. Picture this, Waikiki Beach, where sunsets paint the sky in hues of gold and red, children giggle in the surf, and parents sip cocktails from plastic cups as if nothing happened. But rewind just 24 hours, and it was a different scene, a nightmare wrapped in tropical paradise. An 8.8 magnitude earthquake off Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula decided to shake things up, triggering tsunami alerts across the Pacific like some cosmic prankster reminding us all of our fragile mortality. The sirens wailed their mournful song, urging everyone to flee for higher ground. Panic erupted, people ran, cars jammed streets, and chaos became the order of the day. Amidst this madness, cruise ships fled port like rats escaping a sinking ship. Tourists scrambled with wide eyes and shaky hands clutching smartphones to capture their potential last moments on Earth for TikTok fame. Meanwhile, Jeffrey Booker from Orlando missed his boat's hasty departure because apparently even in crisis mode, punctuality is not his strong suit. As Wednesday dawned with no watery apocalypse in sight, authorities lifted the tsunami advisory. Because why not? Let's pretend everything's fine again. The beaches reopened, tourists returned like moths drawn to flame. From her high-rise perch, Jenny Massey watched it all unfold below. A surreal spectacle of human resilience or folly, depending on your perspective. And there it was. Life carrying on as usual after flirting with disaster yet again. Children played in waves that could have been their doom just hours before, while adults marveled at how quickly normalcy resumed its charade. The U.S. Coast Guard had been ready for anything. Cutters moved out swiftly because 98% of Hawaii's goods arrived by sea. A fact that hangs over these islands like an ominous cloud, reminding us how one wave could sever lifelines without mercy. Don Trang walked uphill for 2 hours when sirens blared, her survival instincts kicking into gear despite knowing full well what could have unfolded had nature not shown restraint this time around. But here we are, another sunset painting Waikiki beautiful once more. A cruel reminder that paradise can turn perilous at any moment but chooses not to today. Maybe tomorrow though, who knows? We'll be here reporting either way until then.
All right folks, gather round for another episode of First World Problems. Today, we're diving into the latest chapter in Kamala Harris' literary saga. That's right, she's back with a new book titled 107 Days, because nothing screams epic narrative like the shortest presidential campaign in modern history. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all for a good behind-the-scenes look. But let's be real here. Only in America do we turn a 3-month job application into a full-fledged memoir. It's like writing a novel about waiting in line at Starbucks because they ran out of oat milk. Harris says she wants to share what she saw and learned on her whirlwind tour of American politics. Apparently, one truth kept echoing: sometimes the fight takes a while. Yeah, no kidding. The last time I checked, it took me longer to get through airport security than it did for her campaign to wrap up. But wait, there's more. This book announcement coincides with her decision not to run for governor of California in 2026. And why would she? California politics are so predictable these days that even Netflix passed on the script. Of course, some Democrats are worried about Harris' political baggage from her White House run. But come on, in today's world, who doesn't have baggage? At this point, political baggage is practically an accessory, a Louis Vuitton carry-on filled with broken promises and unreturned phone calls. And let's not forget, Harris has already penned two other books, one memoir and one picture book called Superheroes Are Everywhere. Because when you're trying to make sense of the political chaos around you, nothing helps quite like a children's book about caped crusaders. So there you have it. Kamala Harris is writing yet another installment in the ongoing saga of first world dilemmas, where losing an election becomes literary gold. Meanwhile, somewhere out there is someone still trying to figure out how to pay off their student loans before retirement age hits. Stay tuned next time when we tackle another earth-shattering issue that can only exist within our privileged bubble. Until then, keep those problems trivial and your coffee orders complex.
Welcome to the Daily Dose of Dystopia, where we bring you the latest in our collective journey towards a world that feels like it's been scripted by George Orwell and directed by Stanley Kubrick. Today's feature, tariffs with a side of geopolitical tension. President Donald Trump, in his infinite wisdom, has decided to extend the existing tariffs on Mexico, America's largest trading partner. This means goods from south of the border will continue to be taxed at 25% unless they comply with the United States-Mexico-Canada trade deal, a beacon of hope in this otherwise bleak landscape. It's almost as if we're playing a game of economic limbo. How low can our international relationships go? Trump announced his decision after a, quote, very successful phone call with Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum. Successful because they're getting to know each other better, like old friends catching up over coffee, or perhaps more accurately, frenemies negotiating who gets custody of the economy. The complexities of dealing with Mexico are apparently different from other nations due to those pesky problems and assets at the border. Who knew geography could complicate things so much? In an astonishingly optimistic twist, Trump plans to chat with Mexico over the next 90 days about signing a new trade deal, or maybe longer if they decide they enjoy these heart-to-hearts too much. Meanwhile, Mexico remains America's top source for imports since overtaking China in 2023, proof that when one door closes or is slammed shut, another opens wide. On the home front, Canada waits anxiously on deck as their deadline for higher tariffs looms ominously at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time. Will Prime Minister Mark Carney receive a last-minute call from Trump? Or will Canadian maple syrup suddenly become more expensive than gold? Only time will tell. As if that weren't enough suspense for one day, dozens of other countries face similar tariff threats, with rates varying like some sort of twisted lottery system where everyone loses except those holding all the power cards. Brazil already got hit with an additional 40% tariff this week. It seems no one is safe from becoming collateral damage in this economic chess match. For those nations yet untouched by Trump's letters threatening higher tariffs, don't get too comfortable. A universal tariff hike is looming on the horizon like storm clouds gathering before a hurricane, the kind that leaves destruction in its wake but makes for great reality TV ratings. Stay tuned as we continue documenting humanity's slow march toward absurdity and chaos, one policy decision at a time.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the absurdity of life while clutching our morning coffee, desperately hoping caffeine holds the answers to life's biggest questions. Today, we're taking a moment to reflect on a titan of pop culture and wrestling, Hulk Hogan, or as his friends called him, Terry Jean Bollea. But let's face it, in the grand scheme of things, names are just labels we slap onto our mortal coils. According to CNN, Hogan recently passed away at 71 due to heart complications. A reminder that even larger-than-life personas can't body-slam mortality into submission. His official cause of death was an acute myocardial infarction, which sounds like something you'd order off a fancy menu until you realize it's just a heart attack with flair. It's comforting to know that no matter how famous or beloved you are, your heart can still betray you like an old friend who owes you money. Hogan's death was ruled natural, which is ironic considering there's nothing natural about a man who spent decades wearing neon spandex and shouting catchphrases in front of screaming fans. But hey, if nature wanted us all to be boring accountants instead of professional wrestlers with blood cancer and irregular heartbeats, it would have made life a lot less interesting. As the WWE mourns one of its greatest icons, we must ask ourselves, what does it mean to leave behind a legacy? Hogan helped transform wrestling into a global phenomenon by perfecting the art of pretending to fight other grown men for entertainment. Yet here we are, pondering whether any of it mattered in the end. Did those epic battles against Macho Man Randy Savage really change anything? Or were they just elaborate distractions from the inevitable march towards oblivion? In this dance of existence, perhaps Hogan's real achievement wasn't just his contribution to wrestling, but rather showing us that life is one big performance. An endless series of entrances and exits with costume changes in between, we're all grappling with our own opponents. Sometimes they're external forces like rivals or taxes, and sometimes they're internal struggles like existential dread or deciding what toppings belong on pizza. So as we bid farewell to Hulk Hogan, both the man and the myth, we're left contemplating whether immortality lies not in defeating time, but in embracing each ridiculous moment along the way. After all, if life is indeed absurd, and spoiler alert, it is, then maybe our only choice is to play along until the final bell rings. Remember, folks, life's ultimate finisher move isn't something you can dodge forever. It's best met head-on with humor and maybe some sequin tights for good measure.
In the grand spectacle of modern capitalism, where opulence masquerades as necessity, President Donald Trump unveils his piece de resistance, a $200 million ballroom on the White House grounds. The feverish dream of gilded excess is set to materialize in September, a monument not to democracy, but to decadence. Here lies the embodiment of a society lost in its own reflection, where gold chandeliers and Corinthian columns are deemed essential to governance. The ballroom's design echoes Mar-a-Lago's ostentation, a testament to Trump's unyielding desire for grandeur at any cost. This architectural indulgence will consume the East Wing, displacing tradition with unchecked ambition. Staff will be temporarily relocated, their offices sacrificed at the altar of vanity. The message is clear. Aesthetics trump function when profit whispers sweet nothings into power's ear. With 650 seats awaiting future soirees, this space triples the capacity of the existing East Room, a triumph not of utility, but ego. It is funded by private coffers, an emblematic gesture that blurs lines between public service and personal gain. In this distorted reality, tents on the South Lawn were an affront. Now we erect monuments to our own delusions. The classical facade masks a deeper truth. Beneath this neoclassical veneer lies a society consumed by its own illusions of grandeur. Meetings with officials from various agencies assure us that security and design considerations are paramount, yet we know better. This isn't about preserving history, it's about rewriting it in gold leaf. Trump's vision dates back over a decade, rebuffed once by Obama's administration, an offer then pegged at $100 million now doubled in value and absurdity. What was once dismissed as frivolous becomes inevitable under capitalism's relentless march forward. As Jim McCrary takes up his role as architect-in-chief of this folly, one wonders if he sees beyond blueprints to what truly stands before him, not just bricks and mortar but symbols of a civilization spiraling ever further into self-indulgence. In constructing this ballroom, the ultimate capitalist fever dream, we inch closer towards collapse disguised as progress, while gilded dreams dance around us like specters waiting patiently for their moment under crystal chandeliers' unforgiving light.